Does cybersecurity seem like a terrifying topic? Well, have no fear. This episode is sponsored by Roundtable Technology, the nonprofit IT partner. For the eighth year in a row, they are offering a free webinar to teach you and your staff exactly the steps to make your IT more secure in the new year. Head over to nonprofitit.com/best-ever to save your seat. Roundtable Technology is a managed IT and cybersecurity services organization focusing almost exclusively on the nonprofit sector with over 200 nonprofit clients. So make it your New Year's resolution to get your entire staff free cybersecurity awareness training. Go to nonprofitit.com/best-ever to save your seat now. And here's to a wonderful 2024. Hello, and welcome to Nonprofit Nation. I'm your host, Julia Campbell, and I'm going to sit down with nonprofit industry experts, fundraisers, marketers, and everyone in between to get real and discuss what it takes to build that movement that you've been dreaming of. I created the Nonprofit Nation podcast to share practical wisdom and strategies to help you confidently find your voice, definitively grow your audience, and effectively build your movement. If you're a nonprofit newbie or an experienced professional who's looking to get more visibility, reach more people, and create even more impact, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hello. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nonprofit Nation. Welcome back to some of my listeners. Happy to have you here. The question on deck today, how to leverage technology to support your mission. We're going to learn how big data and emerging technology will determine the fate of the nonprofit sector and some specific ways that you can use it in your own mission and to accomplish your own goals. Now, my guest today is Staren Bird, Senior Director, Nonprofit Industry Advisor for Salesforce. And Staren is a nationally recognized leader in the nonprofit community with nearly three decades spent working with some of the most prestigious organizations in the country, including some that you may have heard of, UCSF Medicine, Duke Medicine, the American Red Cross, United Way, and the March of Dimes. She also founded her own consulting practice in 2010. And Staren partners with organizations to ensure they can access the affordable creative support and counsel necessary to scale their operations and their impact. And Staren, I'm really excited to have you here today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
The first question I usually ask, we all want to hear your journey. So tell me a bit about what you do and how you got into the nonprofit sector.
So what I do now, after a nearly 30-year career in the nonprofit sector as a chief development officer, is I am Salesforce's in-house expert for the nonprofit sector, particularly as it relates to fundraising, marketing, and tying fundraising and marketing. Excuse me, I should say this differently. Tying impact and outcomes back to the fundraising and marketing work that we, many of us, are doing to support mission. I have a really amazing job at this point in my career. I've had this incredible benefit of working with some remarkable organizations all around the world. And now I get to bring my lived experience to bear on the process of digital transformation and innovation for the sector as it relates to Salesforce and our platforms. And I guess the way I like to think about it is this is kind of my life's work now at scale. So I'm really blessed and feeling lucky that I get to have the job that I have and get to work with organizations all around the world on innovation.
I love that you were a chief development officer for 30 years before starting off in your new role, because I do think there's sort of a misconception, and I was a development director for years before I started my consulting business. I think there's a misconception that maybe consultants, people working in the tech industry just sort of do that without any kind of information on how the sector really works. So how do you feel like your background as a chief development officer is influencing the work you're doing now?
The quick answer to that is street cred, but I share your sentiment on that. You know, it seems like the proliferation of coaches and consultants in our industry in particular has reached a fever pitch over really since COVID and over the last several years. You know, I often try to scratch the surface and say to myself, how much time has so-and-so or so-and-so actually spent sitting in the chair doing the work or licking the envelopes or slicing and dicing the data manually? And I think it's important for any organization as you engage people in receiving their advice and practically applying it, that you have people that have lived experience. So I feel really, again, blessed that I've had the career that I've had, getting my hands dirty as both a behind the desk development officer, major gifts officer, annual giving director, all the way up to chief development officer, as well as having spent a portion of my career as a fundraising consultant doing major capital campaigns. So I feel like I know from whence I speak, and I understand both the desire and want to be able to be a better and smarter fundraiser using the tools that are available now. And I also understand the reticence and the fear that comes along with having to change the way you do business, because the margins for error and our ability to be agile and pivot in our industry are slim. They're a lot different than at Coca-Cola or Nike or at some of our for-profit partners, yet we are dealing with some of the most important and life-changing work on the planet that the planet can't live without. And so we don't get afforded that same ability. There's a real tension there. And I feel like because of my background, I'm uniquely positioned to understand both sides of that, try to bridge those conversations with our customers and with so many of my friends and colleagues that are still doing this incredible work all around the world.
And how did you come to be interested in and focus on emerging technology for nonprofits?
Well, I will tell you this, that it's by accident. Anybody that's listening to this podcast that knows me well knows that I am the furthest thing from being completely tech literate. I am, by all accounts, an old lady in this business at the ripe old age of 54 and coming along after much of this innovation has been created. But that said, I'm going to tell you a little story when I answer that question, Julia. I think many of us who have had to grow up in this business, absent the tools and technology we needed to do this work, have had to forcibly make our brains and our muscle memory around fundraising. We've had to act like our brains are CRMs, well-oiled machines. And I became, I guess, for lack of a better expression, I became very interested in data-driven fundraising. This was probably about 12 or 15 years ago when I was asked to run a $150 million campaign for an enormous organization that had never had a major gifts program before. And we didn't have the CRM, the connected data sets, and the analytics that exist today. And it took me manually about 6 to 8 months to ascertain what the actual capability and opportunity on the file was. So I think the genesis of my interest in this work dates back about 10 or 15 years ago. And then as I continued to be a chief development officer in this last decade, I found that I started to explore and use different tools and technology to meet the need that I had previously done manually. And what really tipped me over the scales was as we entered the height of lockdown and COVID, and having been a customer of some of the most remarkable technological tools in the industry across the board, I woke up one morning, this is a true story, about 3 weeks after my 50th birthday, and I had my Jerry Maguire moment in fundraising, kind of realizing nothing was ever going to be the same after COVID. And I was particularly and acutely curious about how myself and my colleagues would navigate this with disconnected data, with the advent of remote work, with, frankly, our inability to sit in a conference room and compare lists anymore. As simple as that. And so with that, I really dove headfirst into what would this mean. And fast forward several weeks later, without looking for a job, I ended up in this position at Salesforce where I now have the, frankly, privilege to work with organizations all over the world that were having that same moment I was having. And they have it at different times and different, you know, courses across their organizational journeys. And that was my curiosity about it. It was our moment. It was our time. Our industry has been woefully slow to innovate. We tend to buy point solutions and then try to stitch them together to meet the business needs that we have. And largely because we have not ever been afforded the resources or time to look at it from a platform and a holistic perspective, that has functionally changed in the last 5 years. Organizations, great and small, whether you're a global refugee organization or a humanitarian organization or a climate disaster organization or a local NGO in my town with a budget of $3 million, you know that you have to work differently now.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. I saw that a lot as well. I do worry that a lot of organizations are kind of falling back into old habits and going back to the status quo. But one thing that we sort of can't ignore, I know there's a lot of hype about it, but you are a technology expert, so I do have to ask you. We've heard about the power and potential of AI. Like AI is coming, love it or hate it, fear it or, you know, embrace it. I believe in the power and potential of AI to be more productive, save time, enhance creativity. So in your opinion, how can fundraisers use this kind of emerging tech to hopefully do their jobs maybe in a more efficient way?
I would categorize this conversation in two areas. I think there's predictive and generative, which we're hearing all of that expression. We've been using, quote, predictive AI for years in terms of segmentation and analyzing our file. I'm going to start with that to say that I think the most exciting piece of the advances in predictive AI in particular as it relates to fundraisers, and I had this conversation, I kid you not, with a friend of mine who's the chief development officer of a museum yesterday at a county fair. So it's top of mind for me, but we have been using predictive AI for a while.
I love the idea of talking about predictive AI at a county fair. I just love it. With the pumpkins. I just went to the local county fair with my son the other day. So I love that idea.
My point here is that historically, the way we have segmented and sliced and diced our files to activate upon it, as particularly in mid-major and major giving, has been on, I might call, like three really basic data points: zip code, home ownership, and any and all publicly held stock or securities that you might be able to find out about. And then, of course, there's recency, frequency, and monetary. So, you know, my good friend Nathan had a funny post the other day about RFM and why we still use it. So that's historically been how we've used predictive AI now. And I often laugh because by those statistics, based on my zip code in California, I might appear to be a major donor, but I'm a single mom of two teenagers. So it's kind of a misnomer. So even though you had that modeling available to you, you still had to dig deep to really find out and have the proof point to make sure, like, really, just because they live in that zip code, are they in fact a potential major donor? Now with predictive AI, particularly when you have unified data profiles and all of your data about the way the donor or prospect is interacting with your organization, you have thousands more ways to predict what this interaction with a donor would be like, far beyond where they live and what home they live in. And the best example I can think of around this that just makes me truly excited is I think what that's doing for us is redefining what it means to be donor-centric. What I mean by that is when your data sets are connected and you can see how someone is volunteering with you, what content they are interacting with you on your website or through the mail or digitally, you can see how or where they're working or clicking through some of your social media posts and or how they're giving. That donor, just like we used to say in major gift training, is showing you how they want to be interacted with and what information they want to know about. And it therefore enriches our ability to ruthlessly prioritize that file based on their interest and their engagement with us and not just around the potential for giving. So no matter how you slice that with a predictive model, the gift will be better and it will have more staying power and their long-term value will be real as a function of the engagement driving the fundraising strategy. And that's all based on predictive analytics. So that's my first comment around the predictive side.
And that's all available to
Absolutely. Us. But the biggest trick, Julia, is having clean and unified data. So for all of the whiz-bang and excitement about artificial intelligence right now, my first question 10 out of 10 times with an organization who's interested in this is, do you feel like your data is in a place where you can leverage these tools? It's like I often use a housing analogy. When you're remodeling a house, if you put in a gorgeous bathroom with no plumbing, you can't flush the toilet. So there you have it. So I think the predictive piece is very exciting around donors' behavior driving the engagement strategy and then therefore ultimately the solicitation strategy. Then as it relates to generative, listen, I can't imagine myself ever writing a $100 million proposal or an impact report to a $50 million donor exclusively using generative AI. That said, I could see myself doing a first draft of a scaled solicitation campaign. And again, back to my data unification. If your fundraising data, your impact data, and your outcomes data, and your mission data are all buttoned up, and you are able to say, I would like to write, and I'm going to make up an example. I would like to write my annual stewardship report to all of the donors that gave $5,000 or more to our housing and homelessness program. And it spit out not only the list of the people that are going to get that letter, but the first draft of that letter, and then I could go in like I used to with my old school mail, Word mail merges and personalize. Generative AI could do that for us and save time and enable us to genuinely produce these impact reports in a meaningful way with real data, real giving information, and real impact. I'm reminded of when I worked at a university and I used to have to walk around campus to find my other fundraising colleagues to find out how Mr. and Mrs. Jones's gift in the business school or gift in the hospital had impact. And then I had to sit down and stitch that together into an impact report. Those data sets are united. You could do a first draft of that prior. I think about annual fund with generative AI, how brilliant and personalized those annual fund letters could become more quickly. But I will say, I will go to my grave saying that I also think there are some things that will never change about philanthropy. And first and foremost is that it's people giving to people and that the human piece of personalization and the human exercise of sitting with someone and understanding what they care about and why will never go away. And if it does, then I think we're sunk as a human race, but that's another podcast.
How do you think that we should be using this kind of technology for, better donor stewardship and not just acquisition, but maybe stewardship and cultivation?
For me, it comes back to my comment earlier about donor centricity. And when you have, again, the data strategy and the systems in place and the insights about how people are interacting with your organization, again, from volunteering to content they're engaging with or to relationships that they have with people that you have, your organization has relationships with. I think the idea that you really put the donor's interest at the center is what will materially change the leaky buckets and or enable you to prioritize stewarding and quote, acquiring new donors at different levels based on what they're interested in. And these tools can help you do that in turn, I used an example of this in a conversation I had last week. if you were doing an event, let's say you're a national organization and you wanted to do an event in Chicago for a particular disease specialty that your organization is researching. You know, back in the day, we would just say, who are the top 50 donors in Chicago that we should go invite, regardless of whether or not they were interested in, they just happened to be in that region and had made a gift to our, back to the RFM comment. You know, again, what if using this technology, you were able to not only see those pieces, but also see how these people are interacting with other like causes in that area and how that has been successful? Then you really hone and identify who should be in the room with your organization and learn more about it. And it takes, again, the blast and batch or batch and blast or the you know, where you throw things up against the wall and hope, you know, you invite 180 people and you hope 30 show up. You know, it really enables you to personalize those invitations in a way based on information that is, you know, readily available. I think we also have to be careful not to be creepy.
Be careful not to be creepy. I love that quote.
Yeah, be careful not to be creepy. Okay, yes, we are the nonprofit sector and we are in a human-centered business. Yes, I shop on Amazon too, and the shoes that I clicked on a week ago are still following me around. We need to be very, very thoughtful as a sector, particularly because so much of what we do is built on trust, about how that lands and how that is received. And I think that everyone is talking about trust, privacy, and security in this space. I think it should be three times amplified for the nonprofit sector, which is part of why so much of the thought leadership around fundraising and AI is just so important right now. And we cannot take our eye off that ball.
I absolutely agree. Trust is everything in the sector. And if we break that trust, you know, it's sort of like breaking a mirror. You can put it back together, but there'll still be cracks. And it will never go back to the exact way that it was.
I want to double click on something you just said there, because that's where, for me, the plumbing analogy or coming back to the sound data strategy and really having that piece of the architecture, as it were, sound, the foundation really strong and sound, so that as you start to leverage more robust predictive analytics or any of these large language models, that you are confident that you are protecting your donor and your organization's data, and it is not being used in the public domain to advance anything else, that it's really just about advancing your mission.
So what do you say to the skeptics out there? Not even just the AI skeptics, but I guess any skeptic of technology, and especially maybe the AI skeptics. I'm just thinking of the development director, the marketing director listening to this podcast that wants to create buy-in at their organization, but they're not sure that they can get that approval from their higher-ups or from their board. What advice would you give them?
Again, it really comes down to, when I say data strategy, I mean enterprise-wide. So often there is a data strategy for mission, a data strategy for advocacy, maybe a data strategy for
all siloed.
Right? All siloed. Mm-hmm. You know, my posture with this is always about what are the enterprise level goals around data. And I think, frankly, and this is no harm, no foul to our industry, but we have, again, back to the point solution headaches that we've all dealt with for years. We haven't had the luxury to take a minute and step back and say, okay, what are we trying to do here? And how do all of the data sets that we have inform the work that we do? How are they interdependent or independent from one another? So my advice is really to engage senior-most leadership to get aligned around, you might have a 3-year strategic plan for mission. What are the tool sets and the technology, and or just like you would look at the resource strategy for how you would staff such a thing, how are you going to build the scaffolding around that strategy that will support it and be supported by technology and or be ready for innovation that we know about or that we don't know about yet? And I just think that organizations can't afford to pretend that we don't need this anymore, that we need the basics. So oftentimes, Julia, it's a conversation around, I know you want to leverage AI because everybody's talking about it, but let's take a minute right now and think about, is your organization AI ready? And what does it mean to be, instead of AI ready, what does it mean to be innovation ready? Or what does it mean to be agile? And what does it mean to be able to have the data and the insights you need to make the business decisions you need to make, whether it's around revenue, marketing, advocacy, mission, or impact? All of those things have to be measured, and they all are actually interdependent because you're building research reports on impact reports, on impact data. So there's an opportunity to really do a little house cleaning before we renovate.
I think that's a phenomenal point. What are some of the biggest challenges, I guess, maybe some of the biggest pitfalls that nonprofits run into when they're creating this data strategy?
Well, I think it's back to, this is a human-centered business. I think we, as I said, I remarked earlier, like, we are not brought up in this industry historically to be educated in what story is our data telling us and how do we use it. If you are a nonprofit professional that was lucky enough or went to business school and you understand that one of the biggest questions you ask yourself is, what are you measuring and how would you measure success? And then you work, you know, you begin with the end in mind. So much of the nonprofit sector is in hyper reaction mode or constantly on a treadmill that they don't get to afford themselves that opportunity. So that's really the biggest pitfall, is time as a resource. And then resource as a resource, because it does require people and process in order to make any kinds of decisions about spending on technology and then standing it up. And so I think the pitfall is really bringing the business along with IT professionals. So I'm a fundraiser. Like I said at the outset, I am not, you know, do I know enough about technology to be dangerous now? Absolutely. But I know what technology needs to do for me and my peers in the fundraising industry in order for us to be successful. We need to make sure that the business and the IT professionals are at the table at the same time, so that IT understands how it supports fundraising and fundraising understands the process of IT in terms of decision making. I was paid one of the greatest compliments I've ever been given in the last 5 years recently by a CIO of a pretty major nonprofit. And I stood up in a meeting and I gave a kind of a 20-minute presentation on the intersection between fundraising and IT. He said to me at the end, he said, in the 20 minutes you spoke, Staren, I learned more about my role in supporting revenue than I have in the 25 years I've been doing it. And I think it's because we just are off doing our own things. And it's like, but you never want your, I mean, I was never the CRO that wanted the IT person to say, oh, I came and just bought you this new tool. Here's what it does. Well, he or she doesn't understand what my business is. How would you buy me a tool? And vice versa, why would I be buying a tool if I don't know how it fits into the broader tech stack or what it might cost my organization long-term? So there's a very real partnership there that we need to hit reset on in order to work together.
I love the thought of not having silos. I feel like a lot of my work is being a couples counselor between the marketing department and the fundraising department, because even that is so siloed. And often I've actually had clients where the marketing department is using a different email client than the fundraising department. One is in charge of one social media channel and the other is in charge of another social media channel, and it's not integrated. I think that business would not hopefully function that way. I think that nonprofits are just so used to, like you said, doing their own thing, putting their head down, being reactive instead of proactive. And I feel like most of my listeners, they work for maybe smaller organizations. Maybe they're in a small team. So where should they start first if they really are thinking, okay, we need to get it all out of a silo. We need to figure out what our tech is doing. Is there some kind of maybe audit assessment checklist? Where should they start first?
So I can speak to the way we're doing it now at Salesforce. And we have developed this really remarkable, what I would call a very inclusive process that enables us to very quickly engage not only the IT leadership, but the business leadership, depending on whether we're working with the marketing team or the fundraising team, or maybe both, where we're able to do a self-assessment. And it's interesting to hear from the business leaders, not only the chief development officers, but a frontline fundraiser or major gift officer, about what's working and what's not working for them with the technology. It's anonymized and they're able to weigh in. And then what we do is we work with the survey and data results. And this whole process can take as little as 3 weeks or as long as 8 months, depending on how big and monstrous the org is. And we take a look at, what's the self-assessment? What are you saying about yourselves and how the technology is serving your business? And then we also work with the C-suite and executive leaders to really understand what the enterprise-wide goals are. And then we take the enterprise goals and we map them to their business objectives in a given fiscal year. And then we just talk about what are the Salesforce capabilities that map to supporting those goals and objectives. Not about licenses and pricing, but like, what are the functionalities that these teams need based on their self-described enterprise goals and their enterprise objectives and their pain points? And then we take a look at what have we seen with other like organizations that have similar challenges, and where have they seen the uptick or the difference based on where they started? Because everybody, every organization likes to think it's a special snowflake, and they all are. But many of the challenges we have with data governance or with road mapping or with rolling it out have more to do with the people and the process than it does with the technology will do what we need it to do. It's about having the buy-in and all voices at the table from the outset aligned on the goals and objectives and the pain points that enables us to really develop and gain velocity around what the solutions can be, and then how quickly the organization can move.
I think that's great. And that's a very good sort of structure and framework for nonprofits just starting out, because you don't need to have 100% of your ducks in a row. You know, it's all a process. It's a learning process. It's like an iterating process. So I first heard your name on the roster for Dreamforce. So can you tell me about the Dreamforce conference and a little bit about your session? I thought it was really interesting.
So, you know, Dreamforce is the annual pilgrimage and big tech conference that Salesforce hosts every year, usually in mid-September, to really highlight the innovation that we're seeing with our customers globally, you know, across industries. So there's everything from the nonprofit sector to healthcare and life sciences to retail, commerce, finance, et cetera. We also incidentally do world tours where we take like a mini Dreamforce on the road, and we do that around the world between, you know, there's a few coming up now between now and the end of the calendar year of 2023, but they happen annually. And at Dreamforce this year, of course, no surprise, the big focus was AI plus data plus CRM. And that could be CRM plus data plus AR. You can move those three things all around. At the end of the day, that was really the big focus. My session this year was on AI and the future of generosity. I did my session in partnership with John Thompson, who is the AVP of Data and Philanthropy Operations for Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Brilliant man. And what we really talked about focus more specifically on the predictive AI and predictive analytics that we talked about earlier, just in terms of the advances around that and the algorithms that are now created that really take RFM and wealth screening to an entire new level. And so, I mean, as a former capital campaigner and as a major gift officer, that's the piece that speaks to my heart, is how do I know, back to my comment about the county fair yesterday, you know, hiring and holding on to staff members in our sector is very challenging. And so the idea that, for the sake of argument, you could have 5 headcount, but only have 3 of those headcount filled at any given time, the idea that predictive AI and predictive analytics could make your 3 gift officers more efficient than if you had 5, and maybe the idea that you might not need 5 if you are actually leveraging the technology to really hyper drive and hyper focus the 3 gift officers you have, is the piece that's really interesting to me. And that was a lot of what we talked about.
Oh, I love that. I'll put all the links to that in the show notes. So where can people find more about you? Where can they connect with you, Staren?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn anytime. I'm easy to find. There aren't many Starens on LinkedIn, so I'm fairly easy to find. So LinkedIn is a great one. Also, our Salesforce website, if you click through to the nonprofit industry website, you'd find a lot of really great white papers, case studies, readiness assessments, and our nonprofit research and trends report that I think could be really helpful. And then I have a website, starenbird.com. You can also reach me there.
Perfect. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. I'll put all of that into the show notes and hopefully we'll connect with you. Maybe some of my listeners will come to Dreamforce, connect with you, and let you know how they are using technology to enhance their impact.
Love it. Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate the invitation.
Well, hey there. I wanted to say thank you for tuning into my show and for listening all the way to the end. If you really enjoyed today's conversation, make sure to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app, and you'll get new episodes downloaded as soon as they come out. I would love if you left me a rating or a review, because this tells other people that my podcast is worth listening to. And then me and my guests can reach even more earbuds and create even more impact. So that's pretty much it. I'll be back soon with a brand new episode. But until then, you can find me on Instagram at JuliaCampbell77. Keep changing the world, you nonprofit unicorn.